The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Premier League, Götterdämmerung. Arsenal's number is up as House wins in Monte Carlo, while City get beaten across the two legs by Barcelona and between the two legs by Messi. If he was a gynecologist, he'd be struck off for spreading the pegs and slipping his balls in. With the Clasico on the way, we'll be getting the Spanish reaction to that. Then elsewhere, we'll be cooing over Juve's win at Dortmund and over what's in store in the lower divisions this weekend, including unfashionable footballing backwater, the Premier League, where Liverpool host Man United and Anfield, and where Sunderland unveiled their new manager at West Ham, putting a Dick Advocaat among the pigeons. But will it be enough to stop them going down? What are the many questions we'll be tackling in a Football Weekly Extra that also includes the greatest, most surprising stat you'll ever hear? All coming up in Football Weekly Extra.
Quite the claim, that.
Yes, James Torncastle, it is quite a claim. But I think you'll be pleasantly satisfied when I unveil that stat later on, listeners, in the show. Could happen at any time. So you can't skip forward. This is a stat. You are going to go back. You'll rewind it and think, I can't have heard that right. But you did. And we've gone and checked it because it was so unbelievable. And once you've heard it, you'll be able to tell all your friends and they'll fall over, basically. Yeah. Producer Ben says you'll remember where you were when you heard it. It's that kind of stat, Paul.
Like the death of Kennedy.
The JFK stat, yeah.
Yeah. Now, football business, listeners. Midweek, full of Euro delights.
You're going to introduce us or not?
Oh, crikey.
You're going to do that?
That's Paul McInnes.
This is the only thing we get back in return for coming here. We don't get paid.
Yeah.
We get like 5 seconds of Jimbo time where you announce our name in a funny way.
Paul McInnes. Jacob Steinberg.
That's even funnier.
James Horncastle.
Hey.
Yeah. All right. Euro delights. Did you watch the midweek action, Paul?
I did.
What did you enjoy more? Arsenal huffing and puffing but ultimately failing to blow Monaco's house down, or Messi?
I think in the end it has to be Messi, doesn't it? It was one of those ones about half an hour in, probably after the meg of all megs, where you just start realising, oh, you are watching a masterclass. This is one of those games where he just proves again just how far ahead he is of the competition. Yeah, it was wonderful.
It was, wasn't it? What do you think, James?
Megsy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even Guardiola, I mean, that was the great thing after he put the ball through the Yorkshire Figo's legs of James Milner. See, just Pep Guardiola's face.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, the Yorkshire Figo.
Really?
Yeah. It's what the Mirror call him.
Oh, okay.
Well, as Pellegrini was saying in this paper the other day, he's such a great player, James Milner. And he is. But he got taken to town, as did Fernandinho.
They're also silver in the first leg.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just Messi, it was Neymar as well who got in on the Megsing as well. But it was men versus boys. I mean, it was embarrassing for City. I mean, for the level to be that pronounced is considering the amount of money that they spent, not since the takeover, but even in the last couple of years, you know, 170 million they've spent. And you look at the players that Barca have added in the summer: Suarez in the first leg, Rakitic in this one, the ones who make the difference. And none of the players that City brought in of late made any difference whatsoever, be it Boney, be it Fernando in recent weeks, be it Mangala, etc. You know, it's a bit of an indictment on them, really.
Although they were playing Barcelona and they were playing one of the greatest players ever on one of his special nights.
Yeah, they have been beaten before by English teams, probably. Chelsea, who were probably inferior to this. That Chelsea probably inferior to this City team, so it can be done. I mean, it's not so long ago that Barcelona were supposedly in crisis 2 months ago, where it was Luis Enrique was going to go and Messi was going to go, and then suddenly it's been a complete reverse of that. So I think that they could be vulnerable, but certainly not against City last night. The way that they set up in the first leg, the way they played that first leg, it was lost in the first, really the tie was lost in the first half hour by the crazy tactics really that Pellegrini chose. No as Koeman said the other day, no football matches is impossible. Otherwise, what's the point of playing when they went and drew at Chelsea, which no one thought they would do? So sometimes it can be done.
That's a fair
nice
point.
Philosophical statement that probably doesn't stand up, actually, because I mean, if you, as time goes on and these gaps between elites go ever greater, so you might say that PSG, Bayern, Real and Barca are kind of on a slight plateau above everybody else, and then you've got the top four in the Prem, the top six in the Prem, who've got on a plateau from everybody else. It becomes much more difficult to compete on those terms. I did think, though, that actually City, while they could have conceded eight quite easily.
Yeah, we should talk about Gerard. El Mundo Deportivo, the Catalan sports paper, said Barbaro, which I think is kind of like barbarous for Messi's performance, but then Hart's up there as well, and they say Brave Hart.
Yeah, but it was a little bit Tim Howard in the World Cup against Belgium, in that I thought a lot of the finishing was quite poor. And although obviously Hart played well, a lot of it was too close to him. I'm not sure that there was really any save.
But isn't that also to do with him?
Yeah. He played well. He made it harder probably for them to score. You know, he made himself big. But I'm not sure there was any save that would be the best save that you'll see this season. I think that they, you know, the one where Suarez was through and he put it wide. You know, he should have scored that
right
in the second half.
I just add to what Jacob just said there, that it was on two levels Hart did very well, I think. One, making those reactive saves. I mean, they were incredibly quick, and even though they were close, he did them exceptionally. But he also forced the strikers to shoot. I think there were about six or seven times they came through in between Sanya and company, but nobody could take it round because he closed the angles off so well.
All right, so Joe Hart's good, but the rest of the Premier League's rubbish, Paul. Rubbish. And I've got the figures to prove it. Oh, hang on.
Is this the stat?
This is
just a warm-up.
No, this is just to say. This is just the numbers you've read everywhere. You know, Premier League in crisis, etc. At its height, Premier League had eight Champions League finalists in eight seasons, winning three of those finals. Now they've only had three quarter-finalists in the last 4 years. So that's three of the last 24 quarter-finalists. And we know why, because there's no winter break. Oh, hang on. Here's Mikael Jongsma tweeting. It's well worth noting that before the winter break didn't happen, Liverpool were already third in the group, Arsenal second, and City were second too. They weren't on top before the alleged fatigue.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the winter break theory. I mean, it wasn't so much of a problem when English sides were dominating in Europe between, 2004, say, to 2009, 2010. That wasn't a problem then. I think it's, you'll find a lot of the world's best footballers concentrated at three clubs. Bayern, Barcelona, Madrid, and probably PSG as well have another load of them as well. So it's not so much for a surprise that when they come up against Barcelona or Madrid or Bayern that they're going to lose. And there is a trend in the Champions League of Barcelona, Madrid, and Bayern keep on getting to the semi-finals all the
time. So what you're saying is that the Premier League is too equitable. The talent is spread too well between the teams.
Maybe partly, but also
there's a case for that.
If there's a relative shortfall in talent between Premier League representatives in the Champions League and those from La Liga and PSG, then surely the way to make up for it is with better coaching, better tactics, and better in-game management, which was the problem for City and for Arsenal in the first legs.
I agree very much so. And I think...
But that's why they brought in Pellegrini, no? And that hasn't worked.
No, I mean, I think Guillermo Pellegrini's going the wrong way to a certain extent, although I think his 4-4-2 might have been in the right direction, but it failed, is that to go into Europe and try and play the European game, try and play like Barca, we don't have the players. Our players are not good enough to play that game. Our players are around a mixture of physicality and technical ability.
Paul, I don't agree with you. I don't believe that a decent manager, he doesn't have to be a Guardiola, but a decent manager couldn't take, say, City squad and fashion something which could beat Barcelona.
I'm in agreement with you. I think the way we have to play is we have to play a Premier League way in Europe.
Ooh.
I think you have to have a sort of...
What is a Premier League way?
Well, to play fast and direct. And I think that a Pochettino-style approach where one of the problems with the Premier League teams is when you lose the ball, which we do, we turn over more quickly, then we spend ages trying to get it back and we lose energy as a result, blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
But, you know, there have been developments in the Premier League in recent years, Pochettino being one of those people who put then emphasis on, and Rodgers as well, quick ball.
That's Barcelona.
Quickly getting the ball back.
That's not a Premier League style of play. That's something that was taken from the Guardiola style.
What, the pressing style?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's... But
they all do that.
They also play slow possession football, like, you know, like Manchester United are trying to do. I'm saying that if you play a quicker game, which I think Arsenal on their day can do, a technical, quick, direct game, then that's our better chance of winning these crunch ties.
Isn't this all a bit of a red herring? Because the genuine problem at the heart of this for the Premier League, the reason why nobody's through in the quarterfinals is the away goals rule. As Arsene Wenger was explaining, it's outdated and he's campaigned against the rules created in the 60s. Football has changed, says Arsene. And a lot of people saying that after Arsenal went out. It was, what, a 3-3 drawn aggregate? But they went out because of this ridiculous, outdated away goals rule. I actually like the away goals rule. It's part of
football. Don't mind it too much. It was brought in back then because it was harder to go
but
away
it is.
From home. But now it's different now. Well, it's different now, I think, because, you know, when you went away from home in the 60s, maybe you were going to, you know, behind the
Iron Curtain,
and, you know, it was very different to go then. Whereas now it's much more. It's not the culture shock probably to go to by Munich and Barcelona all the time. That they're so used to going to these places, the various teams across Europe.
Had there not been the away goals rule, then it would have gone to extra time, and who knows what could have happened. Do you think Arsenal deserve to go through, Jacob, on Tuesday?
No.
Why not?
Well, regardless of whether you think the away goals rule should stand, they knew what the rules were beforehand, so don't concede three goals at home. They lost the tie in the first leg with an awful performance. It's like, have you never played two-legged football before when, after 50 minutes of the tie, Per Mertesacker is charging up and you're being caught on the counter-attack by Dimitar Berbatov. They couldn't handle that time mentally. They've admitted they couldn't handle that time mentally. They shouldn't have lost to Monaco. Okay, City were playing Barcelona and Chelsea were playing a good PSG, but they shouldn't have lost that Monaco side. You saw on Tuesday night, they're not that good. They defend very well, but they're not that good.
All right, well, out they went. And that's all a bit dramatic. No English sides. We have to see now if Everton could be the only Premier League side. They're playing Thursday evening, of course, Europa League. They're 2-1 up, but that was at home. Now they have to go to Dinamo Kiev. That's not going to be easy, I'm thinking. But by the time you hear this, listeners, the extra time and ultimate exit on penalties or whatever it is.
Or away goals.
I think that'll be interesting if they go through on away goals. What score would it have to be for that to happen?
My feeling is that Dynamo Kiev would have to win 3-2 for that to happen.
3-2, yeah, that would make sense.
There was a good article in the very first issue of the Blizzard arguing against away goals. Ooh. So it's not like it's just a sudden appearance just because Arsenal have gone.
Right. Although this Everton match is one of those ones where there is that big culture shock and it is a very different place to play.
Got one or two other stats here, but we're not really that bothered, are we, about Arsenal's possession in Monaco, the fact that only six teams in 59 years have managed to qualify in the European Championship after losing a first leg at home. That's crazy. Six teams in 59 years. Only six teams have come back from losing a first leg at home.
It's something like 1.7% of teams.
Wow. You know, that's an amazing stat, if it's true. But it's still not. It's not the stat that we're talking about.
Arsenal winning 2-0 was the most obvious thing. They might as well have not played the match.
That final chance where Giroud got in Sanchez's way and ended up heading the ball at the keeper, you're like, oh, that is so obviously the moment that you could have changed this dynamic and you conspired to mess it up.
They had 16 minutes to score a third goal, Arsenal, and they didn't really do that much to get it. There was one chance and then a lot of ineffective pressing after that.
They were knackered though, weren't they?
Heartbreaking stuff. No? Heartbreaking for Arsene and Bono up in the stands, and in McIntosh call it the most Arsenal-y Arsenal game in 10 years.
There should be like a Spursy to describe Arsenal.
Well, there is now. I mean, yeah.
I know.
The thing was though, Arsenal did play well. They did. Yeah. They did. I mean, I think that was as good as they could have done, really. I mean, you're not going to score those three away goals, really. They did boss the game.
But they nearly did.
They nearly did, but they left themselves too much to do in the end. And everybody called it that it would. But I thought they played the game in the right way. A lot of impressive performances. Were a nice blend of directness, pace and strength. Particularly Cazorla, who I thought was very impressive in the centre of the park. So, you know, something to take on.
All right, well, they have to travel up to Newcastle for their Premier League fixture. Of course, they're gunning for second now, just 1 point behind Man City. We'll talk more about the Premier League weekend very soon. Next up, methinks, let's dial up our pal Dr. Sid in Madrid. Hello, Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, we were just having a chat about the game, you know, at the Camp Nou.
Yeah, it was quite good, wasn't it?
Wow. Lots of things we could ask you about. First of all, what's been the reaction in Catalonia this morning to Messi and Barca, but particularly Messi?
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, the reaction has been, I mean, not massively dissimilar from the reaction everywhere else, I think, just that Messi was extraordinary, that Barcelona were probably made to be a little bit nervous than they should have been. And certainly, I think if the penalty had been scored rather than saved by Ter Stegen, then I think they might have got very nervous. But there was a sense that Barcelona played very, very well indeed. There's one or two slight doubts about the way the game became very open and whether a different team might punish them a little bit more for that. But the overwhelming sensation is of wow, this was pretty special.
Yeah, a bit of praise I saw in El Mundo for Joe Hart. I imagine other players.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, actually, you know, in the focus really of the match reports in Spain this morning and the kind of the sidebar pieces and the sheer volume of material, the focus obviously is Messi first and then the two goalkeepers, Ter Stegen because of the penalty save and also because of that moment when he kind of dribbled up the wing. But it's curious because in Barcelona at least, that's not really seen as a weakness. They want a goalkeeper who can play with his feet, even if that occasionally means running risks. And then, so there's Ter Stegen and then there's Joe Hart who was talked about last night as having had, you know, one of these games that was just ridiculous, just impossible to believe that a goalkeeper could be that good, which is nice in a way for someone like me who's spent the best part of, well, a bit more than 10 years here now and constantly had Spaniards tell me how rubbish English goalkeepers are.
Right. Catalonian papers raving about Barcelona, pretty much everyone raving about Barcelona, but what are they saying in Madrid, given that Real in crisis, are going to be facing them this Sunday evening?
Don't worry, Jimbo. Everything is fine for Real Madrid because they had a fish supper yesterday.
Ooh.
That is the front page news on AS is that Ancelotti invites them out for a mariscada. He actually didn't invite them out. They had it at the training ground. And then AS at least avoided this word, but Marca went for a word which I've seen so many times before. And every time you read it, you think, oh, you've blown it now. They described it as a conjura, which sort of means a kind of a coming together of the squad to promise that, right, we're going to go and win this game. And of course, every time they tell us there's been a conjura, they think, go and lose. A bit like when they talk about the spirit of Juanito whenever there's got to be a comeback and it never actually happens. But that bizarrely is kind of the focus from Madrid this morning is of a sense of, you know, the squad getting together and saying, right, this Clásico is the game that will turn the season around. We're not playing that well, but Modric is back and a lot of the focus is based on him. And then there's quite a lot of focus as well on Sergio Ramos, who's now back to full fitness. And I think there's, you know, obviously some justification in that because Ramos, despite his occasional mistakes, I think has a kind of a quality of leadership and kind of contagiousness for the other players that probably no one else in that team has.
Sid, a couple of quick things. One, if it was to go badly for Real Madrid at the Camp Nou, and after last night's performance, you can see how it might. What are the potential implications for Ancelotti, or is his die cast anyway? And the other thing we should talk about is Atletico and their passage to the quarterfinals against penalty takings by Leverkusen.
Yeah, well, the answer to the first question, I suppose, was sort of answered last week, wasn't it? When the headline on the front of Marca was nil na mas, you know, not one more. If there's a debacle at the Camp Nou, Carlo Ancelotti will be sacked. The next day, Florentino Perez, the president, came out to do what's more or less an annual appearance now before the media and sort of essentially saying, you're lying, this is all nonsense, Ancelotti's got our support, but then actually squirmed quite a lot when he was then asked very direct questions like, for example, will Ancelotti be there next year? What's happening with Ancelotti's contract renewal? Do you like the way Ancelotti works? All of those questions he was slightly less, in fact, significantly less kind of clear on. So I think if they were to be badly beaten at the Camp Nou, which I don't think will happen, but you never know, then I don't think it necessarily means that Ancelotti gets sacked now. I think the fact that Florentino Perez came out last week and said that means it is very, very difficult for him to do it now. Easier for him to do it at the end of the season, which I suspect is probably what would have happened and what is going to happen anyway.
Sid, let's talk then about Atletico Madrid and Bayer Leverkusen and Fernando Torres.
I'll be honest with you. The pessimist in me thought when it got to penalties, I don't believe it. It's going to be Torres, isn't it, that misses it and they're going to go out. I was so pleased to be wrong. He talked about it after the game, and I mean, you know, it's genuinely a big deal for Torres. The whole of this kind of homecoming is genuinely a big deal. But this is a guy who'd never beaten Real Madrid as an Atletico Madrid player before, comes back and beats him in his first game, who'd never scored at the Bernabeu before. I think it's his second game or maybe his third game, comes back, scores two at the Bernabeu, had never played a Champions League game at the Calderon before, and then scores the decisive penalty. Although, of course, you know, the real hero is Oblak, who came on as a substitute goalkeeper because Miguel Ángel Moya got injured and made the penalty saves that enabled Torres to then score the decisive penalty.
Tell you what, while we're on a Euro tip, let's spread a little love the old ladies' way. Juve, they didn't have a great record away from home in the Champions League. A lot of people thought they might come unstuck. They had a 2-1 lead from their first leg against Borussia Dortmund. They went to Dortmund. And how well did they play, James?
They were outstanding, but I thought they were very good in the first leg as well. They're really intelligent in how they went about their game plan, which was deny Dortmund any space, take the counter-attack away from them. And I think the regret from the first leg was that Dortmund scored at all, in that their only chance really came because Chiellini slipped and that the margin of victory wasn't greater. And instead, in the second leg, yeah, if their margin of error was a little bit finer, they were perfect. It didn't matter. I thought Tevez really settled their nerves and allowed them to sort of grow in confidence with that great strike to begin with. His 23rd goal of the season, his 22nd and 23rd, because he got another one. That partnership between him and Morata really seems to be a bit of a difference. Mm. But this was great, I suppose, from a Juventino point of view, because they needed a statement win in Europe. They needed to start sort of translating that dominance that they have in Serie A into Europe. And while this isn't the Dortmund of a couple of years ago, and they went into this game what with back-to-back 0-0 draws, I think the truth is that Juventus have cocked up against the likes of Nordsjælland, Copenhagen and Gala, and to win 3-0 at that stadium was big.
Yeah, of course, the stadium where Italy had a notable result, back in the day.
Yeah, and the line from Buffon, of course, is that the road to Berlin goes through Dortmund, as it did in 2006. So Juventus are realistic about their prospects. They know that the likes of Barcelona and Bayern Munich are on another level, but are they Destiny's team? We don't know.
Are they Destiny's team? That's the question. They did this without Pirlo. Pereira, I thought, had a very good game. And Pogba going out injured and likely to be injured for some time.
To have a scan this morning. The results will probably be out when this pod emerges as well. But the fear is that he'll be out for a month. But the confidence, I suppose, with being without Pirlo hasn't really been an issue. I think Marchisio has played really well in that position. Seems to be a little bit more balanced. And also, with both Morata and Tevez stepping up, they are a team that is sort of greater than just a couple of individuals.
Did you see the picture of Jurgen Klopp walking alone or home from the Westfalen Stadion? Very evocative, no?
With a little
knapsack.
Humble.
Yes. Alessandro Di Ronato says, what do you think of English thinking so much of Klopp? Never heard Max Allegri mentioned for an EPL job. Tactically perfect tonight.
Yeah, and his team's 14 points clear at the top of the league in Serie A. Which is a bigger gap than they had at this stage last year. That's partly because Roma have fallen away. But, I mean, Marotta, the general manager of Juventus, said after the game that this was sort of Allegri's big revenge because there was so much scepticism surrounding him when he got the appointment. They thought that this wasn't going to be Juventus' year. This was going to be at the end of that cycle of success. But instead, you know, he's done as good a job. He's realised every objective put in front of him. And he did a much better job at Milan than many people give him credit for.
Yeah, indeed so. All right, super. That's enough of that. Very, very shortly, It's time to talk Premier League.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
All right, on we go. And when's that stat going to appear? It's a doozy. Here's a stat. This is Slim Pickens saying, a few weeks ago, I posted that third to seventh places hadn't been this close since 2001. Now, second to seventh is the tightest it's been at this point of a season in Premier League history. How about that? It could get even tighter this weekend, of course. You've got very interesting games. Liverpool hosting Man United, that's got most people's attention. I know there's some other games we'd like to talk about as well, but what about this? Man United won 3-0 against Liverpool at Old Trafford. This, though, looks like being another season-defining game for Van Gaal.
Yeah, he's had quite a few, hasn't he? Obviously, coming off the back of the 3-0 win over Spurs, which maybe not too many people saw coming, given the way they played previously against Arsenal, but it was very, very Spursy performance, and they used Fellaini very well. I don't think that Manchester United can necessarily progress to where they want to go with Fellaini in the side, because it just kind of disrupts the flow too much of the football, and it's too easy to look for him with the long balls, a little bit, you know, crouch Andy Carroll like that. But he did play well in that game, so fair play to him, but. I think what will be interesting will be whether he stays with that side, Van Gaal, or obviously whether Di Maria comes back, because obviously he'll be available after the suspension, and he hadn't been playing too well in previous weeks, despite the fanfare around him, the amount of money that was spent.
Yeah. What's your call for this, Jacob?
I fancy Liverpool. I think they're playing better football. I think they've probably been they have been the best side.
They haven't been beaten since that 3-0 at Old Trafford.
In which they play pretty well,
right? Yeah. Paul, what's your take?
My gut tells me that United might cause an upset here. I think there's something about the fact that United have been playing badly, 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 still getting results, and then it was like a light going on last week. There was such a gap between that and their previous performances. Suggests to me there's capacity for more, and that Liverpool have been on a great run. That run has to come to an end at some point. But that's just my gut.
Right. Well, your gut might be also considering the fact that even though they won last weekend, Monday night, Liverpool were comfortably outplayed by Swansea for much of that match at the Liberty Stadium and got a little bit lucky with that massive deflection for Jordan Henderson.
Yeah, I just think there's a momentum behind Liverpool as there was at this stage last season. And
this does not slip, yeah?
Well, maybe that might happen, but they have an identity, which is something that United have struggled to find, I think, under Van Gaal, and I think that will serve them in good stead. I mean, United have had continuity of results this season, but they haven't had continuity of performances, so it'll be interesting to see whether they can actually replicate what they did against Spurs, against Liverpool.
It'll be interesting how defensive United are, though, because I think maybe the last couple of weeks, possibly Liverpool's performances have maybe had a little bit of a dip. Certainly Blackburn caused them problems with a defensive style. So you've seen maybe Man United sides in the past confident to come out and play at Anfield and it not quite work. But this one, you wonder whether they will try to be very tight and defend and try maybe to pick them off with a set piece or on the break.
Well, that's coming up on Sunday. What will make it really interesting is if Man City continue their recent problems and don't get the result on Saturday, when they're going to be hosting West Brom, Paul McInnes. Tony Pulis, has he got enough to riff on their pain?
Prior experience would suggest so. I'm not entirely sure this West Brom team is flying quite as high as his Palace last season. I think they've lost one in the last five, that late defeat at Villa. They haven't been scoring a massive amount of goals either, though.
Four clean sheets in five.
Yeah, I mean, that is what he come... I think that what surprised everybody last year or impressed everybody was that he added this kind of cutting, attacking edge on top. So I think a lot depends on whether City feel like they need to bounce back and prove a point after midweek, or whether they've just thrown in the towel now or not. But I think it will be a massive blow to City's self-esteem if they drop out of this top two. So I would still expect a home win.
They don't. It's funny because the Burnley game, for example, there was all the motivation for them to be up for that one, and they didn't. Certain players didn't appear to be. So I'm not sure that they're going to come back from Barcelona and go, never mind, we'll smash West Brom and do it for the club.
No, I mean, you can also assume that you'll come back and smash somebody and do it for the club, and it doesn't happen. I mean, I think, you know, Yaya Toure and Samir Nasri, you know, they need to be dropped from the team after that midweek performance. I think that might be the sort of thing. They need more people who are going to be in there grafting. And if that happens, then I think they've got enough quality to score, you know, the odd goal, which might all that you need to beat that West Brom.
James, are Baggies upset?
Well, over the last six games, their record's good enough for fifth under Tony Pulis. So, and, you know, in tandem with those clean sheets, they do have players who can score goals and cause surprises in Berahino and Brown. So, you know, with City in the funk that they're in, what, four defeats in five, okay, in that you have to take into account that they've played Barca home and away in Liverpool. It wouldn't completely surprise me if West Brom were able to at least get a result in this.
Wouldn't completely surprise me, says James Horncastle. Jacob?
Yeah, agree.
All right, then. Meantime,
Arsenal. Mealy-mouthed punditry.
Yeah.
Don't you think? It's the blight
Arsenal,
of
all right, well, let's bust out some big opinions on this fixture. Arsenal, who are 1 point off second place now, they are at Newcastle. Are they going to be pooped? Are they going to be pooped, Jacob?
Tired?
Yeah.
Covered in feces.
Well, that's why you have a squad. Arsenal have quite a big squad, actually, which is kind of surprising, given they're sometimes able to actually absorb the injuries in certain positions. They've got so many players in the position just behind the striker, so they can change it around and shift the midfield and maybe bring in Ramsey, who made a difference on Tuesday night, actually, when he came on, he was pretty good. They could maybe bring in Walcott as well, Rizicky. So they've got all those kind of players.
Isn't Walcott out for
Oxlade-Chamberlain's out after the hamstring injury he got against United. But they can shift it around in those positions up there.
Coloccini suspended, isn't he?
Yeah. Big Papis as well.
Oh yeah, Papis.
John Carver saying there's no meat left on these bones anymore. Their squad has been decimated. So
funny, because they've got a manager called Carver. They've got no meat left on their bones. It's nominative determinism right there. Bang. Should have mentioned, by the way, on the suspensions front, that Ben Foster, of course, West Brom's goalie, out for four... Keeper. West Brom's keeper, out for 4 weeks.
What's wrong with saying goalie?
Yeah. Arsenal at Newcastle. Are they going to get the result there?
I agree with Jacob. I think actually Arsenal manage their squad very, very well. They slightly have to because of all the injuries that they get for all these mysterious muscle problems. But I think they can rotate the team and keep it.
I didn't say they manage it well. I think
I you were observing that they do rotate their squad.
I think one of the things that was noticeable on Tuesday night was that Sanchez played quite badly.
Yeah.
And he's been their best player this season.
He's been out of form for a few weeks, actually.
Yeah, and Wenger was saying in December that Sanchez was in the red zone, he continued playing him all the time and didn't give him a rest. And now we see maybe that he should have done.
All right. That's interesting, isn't it? You've got a Google Watch on, Paul.
Yes.
What does that enable you to do?
Very little.
Oh.
It counts my steps. It buzzes my wrist whenever I get a message, a text message or a WhatsApp message.
Mm-hmm. Does it buzz when you haven't moved for a while?
Oh.
No, I mean, I think that's next gen. I think this is sort of 1.0 sort of.
Will you be upgrading
tech
to next gen when next gen becomes
great? I really don't think so. Although I do like having a watch on my wrist again, because I haven't had a watch on my wrist for many years, because like a lot of people, I just use my phone.
Yeah.
But now I quite like it. I like being able to check that. I think it makes me look distinguished. I've basically fallen into the whole men watch marketing trap.
Okay. Be careful with that one, listeners. Now, much more to come. Nominative determinism, Ringo Music Bingo, Ronan Leonard.
He's our pal from Ireland.
Out of Cork. Nominative determinism of the week. Bristol City's ex-physio was called Buster Footman. That's pretty good. And producer Ben's checked that, so it's bona fide. It's packed with some real treats today's pod, don't you
Still
think, Jacob?
Still a stat to come as well.
That's true.
I'm not sure
stat.
If there is a stat. I think you're just stringing everyone along.
No, believe me, there's a stat.
I'm starting to lose faith.
It's like the Gareth Bale Inter story.
Yeah.
No, it's not like that. Okay. It's not like that. Anyway, now, coming up in the next part of this show, West Ham, Sunderland. Hey, that's a big game because, of course, Dick Advocaat's turned up. We'll get Jacob's thoughts right after this. Carl Spain tweets in with the important question regarding Sunderland. AC Jimbo, has Poyet left two jobs in a row now because of in the dressing room? That's a fair point, actually.
Good question.
Carl, yeah. Anyway, Dick Advocaat coming in.
Or Dirk Nicholas Advocaat. Dick is diminutive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dirk Nicholas Advocaat. Yeah. Cool.
Big Sam be big Advocaat.
But it's nice because he's a big name and that, and he's never managed in the Premier League before and he wanted to, so that's nice as well. But is this what Sunderland need? A man with no Premier League experience, with not much experience of scrapping the bottom of the table, not since his early days in Holland. A man who's spent much of his recent career on a kind of sinecure, like that cushy number of the national team. You just kind of turn up every month and see some games and
spend
that. A Sven, essentially. Yeah. Have they got a Sven, James?
I'm intrigued. I think statistically, there is little or nothing in there being a new manager bounce this late in the season. I think it's something like 0.
Tell that to Tim Sherwood or Tony Pulis.
Well, yes. Look at that win ratio. But it's curious that he would go in and take this job when there's a threat of relegation and... I think, obviously, Sunderland wanted to, perhaps by bringing in a big name, they could reassure fans and players about having someone with a track record. But at the same time, is it the best thing for them to do? I just think Big Poyet just seems to have got so poisonous in there, you know, chewing out fans, media, directors of football, etc. That maybe a change was inevitable, but I don't know.
It's going to be interesting. Do you want to hear a remarkable fact? And it's not the stat of the week, which I'm sorry to go on about. We'll get to that later. A remarkable fact is that when Di Canio came in, lost his first game, second game was the derby with Newcastle. Poyet came in, second game was the derby with Newcastle. Guess what the second game is for Advocaat?
Could it be?
It could, Jacob. Yep. But before that, the Hammers, who just happened to be in almost as bad a form as Sunderland. They're right down the bottom end of the form table.
Depends how you define form. Exactly.
All right.
Because you could just look at the results and say that they're playing really badly and that they've won one game in the league since January. Actually. But actually, the performances have been fairly good in a lot of games. They were really unlucky to lose to Chelsea a couple of weeks ago, 1-0, where Courtois was the man of the match and they were 10 seconds away from winning at Spurs. Last-minute equaliser against United.
That's
so
true.
They've actually drawn a lot of games as well. They've had quite a hard run. So the real disappointment has been that the performance against Palace at home and the cup defeat as well. But actually, if you take a more balanced look at the way they've been playing, it's not so bad. But they need to start winning.
How confident are you that they are going to start winning this weekend against Advocaat's Black Cats?
It's hard to say because you don't know exactly what Advocaat's going to do on... If they were playing Poyet Sunderland...
Mealy mouth stuff again.
No, if they were playing Poyet Sunderland, if Poyet was still the manager, then you'd say, yeah, probably...
It's still the same players,
shambles.
Although Adam Johnson might now be available again because he's been given bail.
But yeah, so who knows how he's going to set the team up or whether they're going to be much more organised than they were last week, which was an absolute... shambles against Aston Villa. The defending was appalling. And
right. What's your feeling, Jacob?
My feeling is that Sunderland are a bad side and West Ham are a good side.
Yeah. So ergo,
West Ham should win.
Right, thanks. Okay, good. They are, of course, Sunderland, just on the edge of the relegation zone. They're 1 point ahead of Burnley now. And Burnley, after their remarkable result at home to Man City last weekend, they have to go to Southampton. Yikes. So very much the job's not finished there for Sean Dyche. They did beat Southampton 1-0 at Turf Moor earlier in the season, so that's auspicious. As is, I'm going to make the same mistake again, Jacob. I'm going to say Saints' form isn't good because they've only had one win in five. But perhaps I'm putting too much faith in the numbers. Have they actually been not that bad and just been a little bit unlucky?
They had a little bit of a dip. Certainly when they played against Liverpool and Swansea at home around that time, they were not playing too well. But then then they kind of got back on track against Palace with a fairly nervy win, a tight win where Palace maybe shaded it for a lot of the match and got the goal at the end and won the game. And then comes the performance against Chelsea, which they could have won that match,
right,
and got the draw.
So. But as it stands at the moment, you've got Sunderland, who are 1 point off the drop. Then you've got Burnley. Then you've got QPR. Then you've got Leicester. Now, QPR are against Everton on Sunday, and Leicester have to travel to Spurs. Everton will be coming off that, whatever it is, in Kiev. Do you see any big movement from anyone? Someone dropping into the picture? Maybe Hull? I'm not sure. What are they doing there? Oh, they host Chelsea. Yikes.
I think the issue for Hull is this is the beginning of a very difficult run of fixtures for them. Because they have to go to Swansea and Southampton. They've still got to play Arsenal, Manchester United and Tottenham. And, you know, while they've had that good sort of upturn in form of late and have been able to get results, there's still probably not a big enough cushion for them to, you know, consider themselves out of danger. I think they're under real threat, unless Ndoye carries on his rich scoring vein. You just can't see them really getting results, even though some of those games against the Champions League and Europa League chasing teams are at home at the KC.
Right, and the prospects look even worse for Steve Bruce, because my shower appears to be leaking into the ceiling of his bathroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we haven't quite located the leak yet, but plumbers are on it.
That could be a big distraction for him.
Right.
If Hull go down, it's because...
Yeah. Trying to keep his head above water, and that could be in a very real sense and not just some kind of journalistic analogy. That's all I'm saying.
A leak inside the dressing room if
exactly
he gets dressed in that room.
Yeah, that's true.
Weird to get dressed in the shower, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. Depends who's in your bedroom.
Yeah, that's true. But,
Is that
is it going down into his shower? Is it shower on shower?
Well, I don't. It's from certainly from my bathroom area.
Yeah.
Apparently it could be the waste pipe.
So he could be pooped.
He is legally the owner of the apartment, but... But he's not resident there, listeners. Somebody else is. Anyway, now, in other Premier League fixture news, Spurs are hosting Leicester. Dublin Dilettante says, oh, I note how Pearson muttered, waxing and waning, my arse, and then left in a hurry. Do you think he'd been reminded of his back sack and crack appointment? We probably don't need to discuss that game too much, because there's loads of other things to talk about, like Villa against Swansea. That's... Oh, we're there. Listeners, here it comes.
Oh.
Right, here we go. Now, producer Ben, credit to producer Ben, he sent me a note. It said, it's a G-lay off between Tim and Gary. It's not really anymore because that G-lay business is over. But he then puts in bracket, you're sat down. Listeners, how about you? All right? If you're driving heavy machinery, stop, okay? Fact, and we've checked this, yeah? Fact. There were only 28 babies born in 2013, the most recent year for which we have records, called Gary in Britain.
Yeah, there's an article about
it
last
week.
Yeah, it
was well reported across the media a week ago.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Why did I not know about this?
This is really bad trading off of old information as exclusive.
No, I've never heard that, and I didn't say it was exclusive, well, but
not,
I did say it's
not the listener's fault that you don't pay attention to what's going on in the world, James.
But all the people and all the babies being born, only 28 of them were called Gary.
Of all the babies in the world.
In the entire nation. That's just astonishing. You're right, there is an article, because producer Ben, when I said, that's not true, Ben, you're making it up, stop fibbing, he printed me out an article, and then we went and we checked and all that. And to put this in perspective, listeners, you might be going, Gary, why? It's a name. It's just loads of people are called Gary. More people... were called Loki in 2013. More babies were born and named Loki and Thor as well than were called Gary.
Why is that a shame?
It's not a shame. It's just a really startlingly gobsmackingly surprising. Listeners, I'm sorry.
I haven't been this disappointed since last Christmas. I mean, this is really underwhelming. This is a lot more than what I got. This is really underwhelming, James. I got some beer. I got bottles of beer.
Okay. Mm. Hey, do you know what the biggest climber is on the list? Archie.
Well, oh, that's really interesting, actually. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Well, yeah, Gary. That, like, some babies... Gary's a weird name to give a baby.
Hmm.
Like Don't Colin.
Sorry?
Colin.
Colin, yeah.
Yeah, you know, to look at a baby and go, Gary.
Fully grown man, however.
Yeah, once you're, like, 20, then maybe...
They
you
look
take,
like a Gary.
You can take Gary as a name, but you can't look at a baby and go...
Well, he's a Gary.
Or a gal.
But there's a lot of names that applies to, I would suggest.
You know, Vinny.
I'm still amazed. Terry. I have to say, I've not been that startled by a statistic in a long time.
This is clear.
It's the only stat that producer Ben's ever given me that I actually said, no, check that. Like, usually we just kind of, yeah, could be.
I might be able to underwhelm as well. I don't know if people know this, but my mate sent me a message the other day saying this stat is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
And it was that Nigeria is the biggest consumer of Guinness after the UK and Ireland.
Now, I'm not surprised about that because years ago I used to work for a West African pay TV channel. Don't look for it. It's not there anymore.
Like they, so many of your former employers.
They were massively sponsored by Guinness. And all their adverts were basically Guinness being drunk by people in Nigeria. Actually, not Nigeria, but Ghana. Okay. Ghana, I think, is another.
It's a different strain of Guinness altogether. It's about 2-3 percentage points more alcoholic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Villa Swansea.
Yeah.
Job's not over. That's going to be a tough game, actually, isn't it? Swansea played well despite defeat on Monday. Aston Villa look revitalised. They look Tim Sherwoodised. But, ooh, producer Ben again with the facts. He says they're only 3 points away from safety with away trips to Man United, Spurs, City and Southampton in their final 9 games. Basically, there's loads of tough games out there. And this is one of them, I would suggest, even though they're at home to Swansea. Hull-Chelsea, you mentioned that. Stoke Palace, we haven't mentioned that. You're very welcome to if you want. Anybody want to mention that?
Palace play very well last
they
weekend.
I watched
that game. That, you know, they've got some real... I mean, when has there been sort of wing play like Palace have this season in the Premier League last? Because it's really exciting to watch.
It's nice to see a team with width.
And they've started to deliver the final ball as well.
Ooh.
So, which, you know, Balassi was a real threat last Saturday.
All right, okay.
Like watching him.
I'm going to move on now. One or two other bits of business before we shut up shop. First of all, hey, Billy Bean. Big shout out to you, Billy. You like soccer. Quite frankly, I can't get enough of soccer, as he told Sean Ingle when Sean went to hobnob with him. Great article, actually. Go and look it up if you're interested in Billy Bean. Finishes with this quote. Numbers are essentially just facts. And ultimately, every sport is about numbers. How many points you get, how many wins you get, it's all numbers. It's like watching a card counter in Vegas playing blackjack. Once you've learned how to count cards, why would you ever go back to doing it on a hunch? That's the Billy Bean philosophy. A philosophy he's now bringing to AZ Alkmaar, whose general director, Robert Urnhorn, and that's exactly how it's pronounced, by the way, used to play baseball for the Yankees and the Anaheim Angels, or California Angels, isn't it, in the 1990s. Anyway, yeah.
Isn't the problem not that you might want to go back on a hunch rather than use data? Isn't the problem more that you just think data is the answer to absolutely everything?
I don't know.
I put that to Billy Bean. Could you pass that
Billy,
on via Sean?
Actually, now that you're in Europe, do come on the show, for goodness sake.
He's not in Europe. It's spring training for the baseball starts in a couple of weeks' time.
One
it?
Thing that I haven't been able to ascertain by virtue of the fact that I haven't actually gone and looked is whether he's now no longer going to be general manager of the Oakland A's.
Oh, no, he is, yeah.
He is? It's,
yeah, he's just going to come across to Alkmaar a couple of times
a consultancy.
A year.
A sinecure.
Yeah.
Okay, sinecure. Cool. All right. Excellent.
Good luck with that, Billy.
Yeah. We'll all be following AZ Alkmaar's progress with a lot of interest. Bravo Reading, who booked themselves a shiny semi-final date with Arsenal, of course, at the Wembley Stadium, the National Stadium, whatever you want to call it, for the semi-final of the FA Cup. That's on Saturday, the 18th of April. And in the meantime, the rest of the Championship were busy. Have been busy this midweek, Paul. It's got ever so exciting. Watford are now top, I see, after a 2-0 win against Wigan. Oh, no, they were at Wigan.
Yeah, at Wigan, yeah.
Right. Borough have jumped to second.
They beat Derby.
Right.
Derby are a funny side. They seem to have spent about a year as the best side in the Championship.
Right.
But messed up the playoff final, which they should have won against 10 men, QPR, who scored a smash and grab goal, and then they don't seem to be able to, haven't been able to pull away, even though a lot of people have sort of at the start of the season rated them as the likely winners of the league, and now suddenly they're 5 points off the automatic places.
They're really missing Chris Martin, who's been the focal point for a lot of their play for the past year and has been out. They covered him for a bit with Darren Bent, and then Darren Bent got injured too.
So you've got Watford on top, then Borough, and then Bournemouth
then
third
Bournemouth.
Again now.
Yeah,
and what about your Norwich?
Yeah, I mean, we had a highly improbable 2-2 draw with
the most improbable game you'll ever see, I think.
Well, that's not wishing to overstate it, but it was.
Yeah, why?
So it was 0-0 when the game started,
but
then Huddersfield took the lead in the second half, and Norwich were out of sorts. But then we brought on Wes Houlihan.
Right.
We scored an equaliser, and it looked like, here we go. Wes Houlihan's our magic man. He makes
so 90th minute. It's all square.
It's all square. We're kind of charging forward for the winner, and then there's a break on, and our players stop, try and play onside. The play offside doesn't work at all. And James Vaughan, ex-Canary, nips in and slides the ball across the opposite side of the goal and scores.
So it's 2-1 in 95th minute now.
94th, I think. And James Vaughan goes mental because it's against his ex-club, takes his shirt off to celebrate, forgets the fact he's already been booked, gets a second yellow, gets sent off. We then spend the extra time that has been added on as a result of his sending off, hoofing the ball into the opposition box. And in the 98th minute, a ball randomly falls to the feet of our debutant, Jamal Loza, who then pumps it into the goal.
Brilliant. All right. Excellent.
Was it 2 points lost or a point gained?
I don't know.
We'll only know at the end of the season.
Hey, that's true.
I have to say, both Borough, I kind of slightly thought that people's overselling Bamford this season, but these last couple of weeks he's really been coming through in the clutch for Borough. And Watford, Watford are just on an amazing run of form. They just can't. They've only lost one in the past 10. They just don't really know when they're beat, and they've just got goals galore in the side. So I think there's a possibility that those two who are occupying those spaces might be the final. And certainly our co-manager, Alex Neil, was mighty annoyed with us dropping that point because, you know, it's going to be difficult to keep up with those two.
Wow. All right. Well, excellent stuff. Thanks for that little roundup there, Paul.
Hey, fine.
That brings us to the end of today's show. We haven't even talked about Mesut Ozil swapping shirts at half time, but outrageous. Probably because we're too upset. Probably.
Yeah, it's worse than spitting.
Yeah, I feel let down.
Is it worse than imaginary card waving or not shaking hands? I'd like to know where these things rank on the table of nonsense.
Is it worse than allowing your waste pipe to drip into somebody else's house, though?
Egregiously.
Egregiously. Oh, but on a more positive note, big shout out to Bhutan, Rootin Tootin Bhutan, who have been putting the boot in every real sense, doing well. You recall the story. You've seen the heartwarming feel-good pieces about the lowest ranked side of the world who actually defied the odds and progressed to the next round of World Cup qualifying by beating Sri Lanka. That's right. They are in a group with, well, it's a group stage that involves 40 Asian teams, including East Timor, India, Cambodia, Chinese Taipei. Brilliant.
40-40.
It's International Week next week. What we were thinking is, we might find out a little bit more about that. And also, we might dial up our friend Michael Jongsma, if he's available, to tell us all about Billy Beane. He's at Alkmaar, and a little bit more on Dick Advocaat. Anyway, that's all for next week, listeners. For now, many thanks to Jacob Steinberg, to producer Ben, to James Horncastle, and Paul McInnes, and you, listener. We'll speak to you on Monday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.